like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guests today are Tibet, the first courthouse dog in the state of Florida, and Brenda Coker, the guardian ad litem volunteer who serves as Tibet's handler under the auspices of Voices for Children of Tampa Bay. Courthouse dogs are highly trained service dogs engaged to make children and others more comfortable in testifying or being interviewed about sexual assaults or other emotionally upsetting crimes. So while we're all about talking animals around here, one of Tibet's main roles is as a listening animal. We'll find out more about what Tibet does, the specialized training she received to do it, her siblings that do similar work in other parts of the country, and more when I speak with Brenda Coker and possibly Tibet herself in just a moment here on Talking Animals. Also later in this program, I'll speak briefly with Carl Wilson, who is spearheading a grassroots effort to place an initiative tied to the Greyhound Protection Act on the ballot in Seminole County. Right now, though, let's meet Brenda and Tibet with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Brenda Coker and Tibet to Talking Animals. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tibet, who I know will not answer, but I'm still going through that motion anyway. Why not? It's a rare treat to have my guest, or guests in this case, sitting across from me and eye contact, a whole actual conversation rather than just on the phone. So, and let the record reflect that Tibet is here, so incredibly well-behaved, lying next to Brenda. I guess we won't hear a peep out of her from what I understand.
No, so. You won't.
In fact, this might be just sort of a natural entree into talking a bit about Tibet's training, which is extensive. Outline how things work for dogs who are graduates of Canine Companions for Independence, just fundamentally, and then we'll get into the beyond that, what makes her a courthouse dog as well.
Okay. Canine Companions for Independence is a nonprofit organization, and they are the largest and oldest assistance dog organization in North America. They have 6 nationwide campuses. They've been breeding their own assistance dogs for about 40 years, and so they really have refined the process, the DNA, that makes for a great working dog. They breed all the dogs in California. At 8 weeks of age, they ship them off to their 6 regional campuses nationwide, where they're picked up by local puppy raisers, who then take the dogs from 8 weeks to 18 months, teach them 30 commands, and socialize them to a variety of environments, and then turn them into advanced training at the campus, where they work with a professional trainer for 6 to 9 months.
So it is, as we say, it's extensive. Now, some people listening, of course, may, given our bent towards adopting and shelter dogs and sort of mixes, or what some people might call mutts, might take shudder a little bit at the idea of the breeding that goes on,
right.
But there's a specific reason for this, and maybe you could speak to that in terms of temperament and other things that they've found over the years from their just experience and why.
Right. A lot of people, do like the idea of rescue dogs, quote, rescuing children or rescuing other people, and that is a great idea, a very romantic idea. But when we're working with traumatized children, we need to know that we have the safest possible dog to provide to them. And we work in very emotionally charged environments with kids that are victims of trauma and abuse. So we need to know that the dog is basically what we call bomb-proof. And that goes down to the DNA, to the cellular level. And we need to know that every day of that dog's life has been strategically designed to make that dog a safe working dog. So with a rescue dog, you may not know its history. It may have some trauma in its background that you know nothing about until it rears its ugly head at a very inopportune time.
And on top of that, Brenda, one thing I mean, of course, I've known this for some time. We've done a variety of shows on different kinds of service dogs, including many that were trained through Canine Companions for Independence. But I guess what I didn't realize somehow till recently, and I don't know if this is true for most or even all the dogs that come through the Canine Companions for Independence. But there's almost a recipe, right, of 75% Labrador Retriever,
right, exactly.
And 25% Golden
You've
Retriever.
Done your homework.
Well, no, but and again, the people say, ugh, you know, but you just explain why it can't be just your friendly, run-of-the-mill, even mm-hmm. very smart, trainable rescue dogs. So, but it's interesting that they almost cooked up a recipe, right, for a particular kind mm-hmm. of set of qualities and
sure.
genetic makeup.
Yeah, sure. And interestingly enough, even with that refinement of the DNA, these dogs still come out possessing different personalities that enable them to be good at different tasks. So, for example, dogs that are paired with people in wheelchairs, who need to perform a lot of physical tasks for that person to mitigate their disability. Those dogs absolutely love to work and love to do tasks and are so proud of themselves and so happy to show you how smart they are. And then you have dogs like Tibet who are made facility dogs. And Tibet is, I call her a marshmallow on 4 feet. She is just kind of a mush, and she loves to snuggle, and she will do the commands, but she's not real crazy about doing them.
I'm trying to rest here. I'm trying to be a yes. marshmallow. I was fortunate to have some time with Tibet before we went on air, and we even commented about how you just sort of gravitate towards her. Very soft, very comforting, very calm. So with that in mind and how things work at Canine Companions for Independence, as dogs are coming through one or more of those stages, do people readily identify, okay, this one's going to be probably good for a facility dog or a courthouse dog. This one is going to be, if they stay on this track, this one's going to be particularly adept at working with someone with a disability. And then do they then go on a specific path once they've been identified that way?
Right. I think that once they get turned into that advanced training and begin working with those professional trainers who have been doing this and have gone through an extremely rigorous training of their own, you know, internships and apprenticeships that they have to go through. They're very, very good at what they do, and they see these trends, and they start identifying what dogs.
And then do they, once they identify, do then to cultivate?
Right.
Just their training might have more of an emphasis than mm-hmm. on Tibet or Tibet counterpart going along to become more sort of specifically trained or able to do courthouse
right.
dog work or similar work,
right,
and where the others might be, again, more physical minded in that training.
And they'll have a class of dogs, and they'll, let's say they have, you know, 20 dogs in a class, and they know they probably have, you know, 10 of those candidates would be service dogs. And so they have people that are applying for dogs. And so they start looking at those applicants, and they go, okay, we have about 10 dogs that we can give to someone in a wheelchair. Or we have, you know, one of the types of dogs that they graduate are hearing dogs for the hearing impaired. And those, that's an even separate set of
characteristics.
They start identifying how many hearing dogs that they can match up.
And so what age of the dog do those things start to separate? When do they start really sort of eyeballing a dog and saying, okay, hearing, service, disabled? Or does it vary from dog to dog? I didn't know if there was a certain period where, okay, this is when we start looking.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Okay, that's something that happens at the CCI camp.
Yeah. Okay. So this is Talking Animals. By the way, I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, I'm joined in studio by Tibet, Florida's first courthouse dog, and her handler, Brenda Coker, the guardian ad litem volunteer who serves as Tibet's handler under the auspices of Voices for Children of Tampa Bay. If you'd like to ask Brenda a question, could possibly try to ask Tibet a question, but so far she seems very quiet. Or you can offer her a comment otherwise at 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Then beyond the extensive training that we've discussed that any CCI graduate undergoes, and I guess we should note, we've talked about this a few times on the show, that a huge percentage of dogs, I hope they won't be insulted by this, but sort of wash out at some
right,
point along
absolutely.
The way. Is it 40 to 50% or thereabouts?
I believe only 40% graduate. That's my understanding. I hope I've got that statistic
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a variety of reasons. They may be behavioral. It mm-hmm. may be a health issue.
Right.
Tibet has a brother in Jacksonville who didn't quite make the program. He's a great dog. He knows his commands, but he has just a very, very minor health issues that kept him from being able to wear the blue vest.
I bet he's frustrated that he can't keep up with his siblings. But so I guess what I've started to get to before I interrupted myself was to say that beyond then the basic, and but extensive when I say basic, training that any CCI graduate does undergo, what sort of additional schooling then did Tibet undergo to qualify her to become a courthouse dog?
Really, it's just a matter of on-the-job training.
Really?
Yes. Okay. I do a lot of training with her. One of the biggest things we really need her to do, particularly in trials, is to lay still and be quiet for an extended period of time.
Well, she seems to have that down.
She has that nailed, doesn't she?
Yeah.
But, you know, to lay still for 3 hours, you know, for up to 3 hours, you know, while a person is on the stand, that's not something that most dogs can handle.
Yeah.
So we work on that at home. She just learns her environment. And so she's kind of knows, has come to know what's expected of her in different environments, just through repetition.
Sure. Well, in Tibet, then, you clearly have a formidable partner who can get through that training and can sit still on the stand or elsewhere for 3+ hours. What sort of training did you undertake to do this kind of work?
Well, the application to get her was extensive, very, very extensive. It was a paper application. And, you know, you tell them everything about your life, what you're doing on Monday at 9 a.m. and Tuesday at 9 a.m. and so on and so forth.
And that's specifically to become a handler for a courthouse dog?
For any of their dogs.
For any of their dogs.
Yes,
okay, so this is a more general application at this stage of the year.
They want to know everything about you and your lifestyle and how you're planning on using the dog and that type of thing. So if they like what they see on paper, then you get to have a telephone interview, and that's about 45 minutes in length. And if they like what they hear, then they invite you to an in-person interview, and that's usually about a 4-hour process where you listen to a mini lecture, and then they have you do some dog handling right there on the spot to see if you can turn around and use that information that you just received to apply in your skills. And then if they like what they see in person, then you get invited to a 2-week team training program. So you live on the campus of CCI for 2 weeks.
And the most local campus
is in Orlando, Apopka.
Okay. Yeah.
And that is called the Anheuser-Busch SeaWorld campus. So Anheuser-Busch and SeaWorld assisted greatly in the construction of that campus.
All right. Well, that's one good thing we could say about SeaWorld. But okay. All right.
So they have a tremendous amount of community support through Universal Studios. All of the different theme parks come in. The 2 weeks that we were on the campus treated like kings and queens. They took very, very good care of us. The campus is beautiful. And the classes are every day. You know, you're in class all day long.
Yeah.
You have nightly homework. You have daily quizzes.
Wow.
And then at the end of it, you have a final exam, both written and practical.
When you were filling out the initial application and before the phone interview and the in-person, was part of what prompted you to apply, were you already a dog handler or trainer of some kind?
No, I was a guardian ad litem already.
Okay.
So I was.
Maybe we should take a moment just to explain what that means.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The guardian ad litem program, and let me put a plug in, we always need more volunteers. We need lots of volunteers to represent these children that are victims of abuse, abandonment, or neglect. In Hillsborough County alone, we have approximately 3,000 children that are what we call adjudicated dependent because they are removed from their parents or their primary caregivers because of abuse, abandonment, or neglect. So we need these folks to community volunteers to be trained. They can come from any walk of life, teachers, physicians, lawyers, housekeepers, stay-at-home moms or dads. It doesn't matter. If you have a sense for what children need and what's in their best interest, you can certainly be a guardian ad litem volunteer if you're over the age of 18. And the training is wonderful, and you have a lot of support in the program. Once you take a case, if you have questions or need guidance, you always get as much support as you need. So we always need more volunteers.
And I guess we can just quickly say, if you want to find out more and find out more about volunteering, the website is VFCGAL.org.
Yes, right? VFCG. And VFC stands for Voices for Children, and they support me, which is a fantastic gesture on their part. That not only did CCI provide this dog, she's worth approximately $50,000. She comes with a $1 million liability policy. That was all made free of charge to the community. And then
by CCI.
By CCI. Mm-hmm. They retain legal ownership of her for the duration of her working life. And then Voices for Children came in on the other side, and they supply all of my operational expenses. So the only thing I donate here is my time. So it's a great collaboration between these nonprofit organizations.
Sure. And how much time does that really mean? How often, it might vary, but how often in a given week, let's say, would you find yourself in court with Tibet?
We try to do about 24 hours a week. Volunteer service. And we divide our time between the courthouse in Hillsboro and the Mary Lee's house on Armenia. And our kids get served, you know, in both places. There's a lot of overlap between what we do at Mary Lee's house.
And can you describe Mary Lee's?
Sure. It's a great one-stop shop type of place for kids that are in our system. They may need to get forensic interviews, which is part of a law enforcement procedure where we're trying to get to the bottom of what has happened to a child. That may be through criminal court or it may be through dependency. We do depositions of children there. We do the University of South Florida Department of Pediatrics has the child protection team there, and they do forensic medical exams, sexual assault exams, and a variety of interviewing of at-risk families and that type of thing. The Crisis Center of Tampa Bay has their offices there, and they do a lot of the counseling of our kids. So we may work with kids with some of the therapists to prepare the kids for trial. So we do a lot of stuff over there.
Yeah.
And then we also follow those same kids over to the courthouse.
All right. Well, I want to get into some more of the stuff what happens at the courthouse. But quickly, I just want to note that a guy who's both a volunteer at WNF and a volunteer, as I believe, at CCI, Bob Hoke, just wrote in to say at a recent CCI workshop, we were told the latest stats on graduating dogs is 45% to 50%. So
okay,
again,
great.
It's,
thanks, Bob.
It's, no, it's, thanks for the info, but it's again, yeah. it's tough. It's
yeah.
very discriminating, and
yes,
not
you.
Just any dog's gonna make it through. So let's take a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brenda Coker in Tibet.
Good morning. This is Gabrielle, and I just had a comment. I work at the Edgecombe Courthouse and had an opportunity on several occasions to meet Tibet, and this is just a wonderful dog. And Brenda, just thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Well, that's very nice of you. Did you have any other question or comment besides singing everybody's praises, which is certainly plenty? But
no, I have a picture of Tibet on my refrigerator at home.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Cool. Well, I have to say, along those lines, I learned quickly that when I posted a couple of things on Facebook about this interview this morning. First of all, Tibet has her own Facebook page, so
right.
people can go to Facebook and search for Tibet. So it gets a lot of action that way. But people love Tibet, and anything about Tibet, people are all over. Beyond just the people who come into contact with you in Tibet in the ways that you just described, I mean, how do people know her otherwise?
Well, you know, just the travels.
Uh-huh.
Our travels,
just everywhere you've gone.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And again, she is the first one in the state of Florida, right? So she's kind of a celebrity,
dog.
Right?
Yeah. And let me just kind of clarify that. She's the first facility dog to work in. So there are therapy dogs that work in courts throughout the state of Florida.
Okay.
And that's just a different level of training.
I see.
And there's different things that we can do that therapy dogs cannot do. Off-leash, we can do some off-leash stuff. And so when Tibet needs to assist in a forensic medical exam, for example, she can go into that exam room without me because that needs to be a confidential
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, so let's.
Right.
This might be a good time to get right into what Tibet and dogs that do what she does, what they actually do in a courthouse setting. So let's say that there's been, unfortunately, some sort of ugly crime against a kid. One thing in that scenario would be interviewing that kid first before there's even a trial to see kind of how that trial would go. So Tibet is alongside that kid to comfort them and make them kind of relax more and speak to whoever is interviewing.
Right. Yeah, one of the things that I'm learning a lot about, the neurobiology of trauma and what happens to the brain when a child or an adult is traumatized. And what happens, we have basically three brain levels. We have our cortex, which occurs all of our higher level thinking and our problem solving abilities. And we have our midbrain, which is emotional and feeling brain. And then we have our brain stem, which takes a lot care of fight or flight. And so when kids are traumatized, they go into those fight or flight types of that brainstem stuff. And so they come out of that trauma and they try to recover, but they might get triggered by a memory of that trauma. And obviously they're triggered when they're asked direct questions about what happened to them.
Yeah.
So what happens is those verbal centers start shutting down and they go down into that brainstem, into those fight or flight regions. And we want to keep them up into those verbal, higher order thinking and verbal mm-hmm. regions of their brain. And so using Tibet is an attempt to try to keep them in those higher areas of their brain.
It's interesting. I hadn't really thought so much about the science of it until you described it that way. Yeah. So in that case, I think you kind of already alluded to this, it would be the attorney, the victim, and Tibet. You wouldn't be in on that, or might you?
If it's a deposition, I do sit in on the depositions. Okay. On the forensic interviews where it's a crime investigation type of thing, it's a forensic interviewer, Tibet, and the child.
Yeah. Beyond kind of that thing of keeping the kid at that more, I guess, effective level of brain functioning. What is Tibet doing to make that happen, to keep that kid hopefully at that level where the interview can actually proceed or the deposition can proceed?
There is a lot of research out there that talks about just direct physical contact and how it affects your heart rate, your blood pressure, hormone levels, that type of thing. So physiologically, it affects and calms the system through direct contact. But there are some indirect contact things. So there was a Japanese researcher, and he realized that eye gaze of a dog between a person and a dog stimulates the release of oxytocin, which is a hormone that we typically associate with childbirth and lactation. But they're also learning it creates trustworthiness. That's a
and
very
a bit of a
strong,
bond, right? Isn't it?
Yes,
sort of,
it's a bonding and trustworthiness type of hormone. They're starting to treat anxiety patients with oxytocin.
For sure, yeah.
So just looking at the dog in the face can stimulate that that trustworthiness factor.
How often in a given situation like that is, and this may be more about the attorney, I guess, how often is the kid, one point or another, maybe especially at the beginning, talking to Tibet as a prelude to kind of talking to whoever's conducting that deposition or interview?
Well, we will work with the child out in the waiting area. They will meet her out there.
Oh, okay.
And
so
what
they're already
we do
getting
is
comfortable.
Evaluate. You know, we want her to be a calming influence on the child.
Sure.
A kid comes in and they're afraid of dogs. Obviously, we're not going to.
Right.
Game over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We want the child to talk. So we're going to take away anything that would impede
prevent that. Sometimes kids, depending on the age, might just chat. And also maybe, unfortunately, depending on the sort of the trauma that they've experienced, might find themselves talking more initially, even if it's about what they're being asked, like maybe directing the answer to Tibet rather than whoever the interviewer is.
Had that happen.
No? Okay.
We have an elevated bed that we use for Tibet in depositions and forensic interviews so that kids don't have to reach down to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ergonomically, we bring her up to
them. Right.
And, it's interesting. We've sat in on some I've sat in on some depositions of kids, and they'll start, they'll pet her paw and literally never leave that paw. And that paw will get a thorough working over for over an hour. And she lays still and doesn't move. And I'm just always astounded by her and what she does. Or doesn't do, as the case may be.
Yeah. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. Today, I'm joined in studio by Tibet, Florida's first courthouse dog, and her handler, Brenda Coker. I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brenda Coker and Tibet. Oh, just lost them. Okay, that's too bad. Maybe they'll call back. So with that kind of interaction, how long has Tibet been doing this sort of work?
We graduated on Valentine's Day of 2014 and went to work that Monday, which was the 17th of February. So just a little over 2 years.
And how, a lot of the work obviously that she does involves spending time with kids, and I guess others, sounds like the focus is kids though, who are in many cases emotionally upset.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we've discussed that she's very highly trained and has, of course, an amazing personality, perfect fit for this. But still, what sort of emotional wear and tear do you think that she experiences, if any?
I can tell there's different, signs of stress that I'll see in her, frequent yawning, that kind of thing. And I know it's kind of time to, wrap it up for the day.
Mm-hmm.
If we're in the middle of a trial, we really can't do that.
Sure.
So when you look at our calendar from week to week, it's just different week to week. There is just no regularity about it at all. So it depends on what trials are going on. So what I try to do is I modify her workload as we're going through the week. If she had a particularly long day one day, then, you know, the next day, if we don't have something real specific or pressing, we'll just take the day off.
So it sounds like you largely schedule the time that Tibet's going to spend and where and how she's going
to
spend it.
Right. And like I said, it just looks different from week to week. We try to accommodate as many needs as we possibly can.
So if there's, let's say, unfortunately, that there's a week with a particularly heavy number of trials with kids that have been through those kinds of crimes. I mean, obviously, you know, there's only so much time and only so much Tibet. Mm-hmm. So what happened? How would you almost triage which case or which situation?
Well, I try to just do first come, first serve.
Okay.
You know, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our system, our legal system, whether it be criminal or dependency, is a fly by the seat of your pants type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have a, you know, a prior request that's, you know, a month old, they get priority.
Right. They're the head of the line.
Right. Kind
of.
Right.
Yeah. So we have an email question that we can discuss. And if not to fully answer, then maybe we can get Bob to weigh in. But this is question. I'm looking for a service dog for my son with autism. Does CCI train dogs that qualify? And how long does the application process take?
Yes, they do. That's a different category of dog that they graduate. They're called skilled companion dogs. And I would encourage you to go to CCI.org and look under skilled companion dogs. And we had several children in our graduating class with autism that went home with skilled companion dogs. So the child is, you know, has the disability. The parent is the able-bodied handler.
And we have another email that just a night note saying, genuine legitimate service dogs are a blessing to many people and prove the adage that dogs are man's best friends. I'm glad your guest talked about the importance of breeding and genetics. You really cannot take a random. Yeah, this is a lady who she and I have an ongoing exchange about pit bulls. So I should have known this was going to come into it. But I take a random pit bull from the shelter and turn it into a reliable service dog. If you don't donate to Canine Companions for Independent, you'll get their fabulous magazine, The Companion. So thank you, Eve. There was something I was just in the wake of that last
thing. I know you and I talked about her siblings.
Right, yeah. So because some of them do similar work.
It goes back to the
work,
breeding
right?
idea. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we were talking about, you know, 45% of the dogs that, you know, actually make it to graduation and get to wear the blue vest. I believe there were 9 puppies in Tibet's litter. There were 6, I believe, that graduated. And of those 6, 3 of them became courthouse facility dogs. So
wow.
That's an amazing.
That seems. Yeah. I imagine that's a pretty disproportionate
right,
number.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That particular litter really lent itself to this temperament. And so she has a sister, Tate, in Napa, California, that works for the Napa DA's office out there.
And doing pretty much the same.
Doing victim advocacy work.
Okay.
And probably more with adults.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
And then she has Tula in Oklahoma, also working for a victim advocate out there in Oklahoma. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I know what I was going to say before is when you talked about legitimate service dogs, because what she was referring to is a while back, I did a panel discussion on service dogs and emotional
support animals.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And all the scams that
are
perpetrated and stuff. So, yeah, this is obviously way at the other end of the spectrum from those with the kind of training that Tibetan and dogs
And, you know, I am not a person with a disability, so a lot of people say, well, it must be great. You can take her everywhere with you, and I can't. I don't have a disability, and it's the person with the disability that possesses public access. It's not the dog itself.
Interestingly enough, I mean, one of the things that came out of that conversation is that I think at a lot of places you would go, not that you would want to because you just said you're really not permitted to, but I think just by virtue of having the vest, which Tibet is wearing now as we speak with her in the studio, a lot of people would say, oh, wherever you're trying to get access to, you've got the vest.
Right.
You're good to go.
Right.
So
yeah, and you know, CCI being an assistance dog organization really, you know, is very, very true to those public access laws.
Yeah.
My professional background, I'm a physical therapist, so I've got, you know, a disability advocacy at the root of my bones.
Sure.
So I also just very respectful of those types of things.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brenda Coker in Tibet.
Yes, this is John. I have a disabled youth, but a troubled youth. And I have a shepherd that's not quite a year old. Is she too old to train to do any kind of service, like possibly even rescue or, something like that?
So are you thinking of the dog helping your youth, your troubled youth?
Giving him something to do besides sit around and do nothing.
Gotcha.
He loves the dog to death, and I just thought maybe if we put the two together, I could maybe give him something to, keep him busy.
You would probably need to find a professional dog trainer in your area that might be willing to work hand-in-hand with him. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, you'd want to have someone who's obviously a very competent, skilled, experienced trainer between what you've described about your youth there. And
what about the dog? Is she too old to
It probably depends on her individual intelligence. Shepherds generally are extremely intelligent.
She's nose to the ground. She is super smart. She's really nose to the ground when it comes to finding things.
Right. So with consistency and really good training, someone that really knows what they're doing, you probably can turn her into a great dog.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. All right. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brenda Coker in Tibet.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Good. How about you?
Oh, really fine. Now, I just had a quickie question. These dogs sound intriguing.
They are.
Like I said, 45-50% of them don't make it. What happens to the dogs that kind of like get washed out or whatever?
I can speak for CCI, and at least this is my understanding, that the puppy raiser that took them from 8 weeks of age to 18 months, they have first right of refusal. And then it's my understanding that there's an extremely long waiting list that CCI has. Yeah, several years long, I believe.
That's a $30,000 dog, and I thought, I bet the ones that didn't make it aren't cheap either.
Right.
But like, I'm an older fellow. I'm up getting in my 60s, and I'm not disabled yet. Mm-hmm. But a dog that, like, washed out and he's pretty well trained, good temperament, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Two of us could learn together what to do.
Right.
Or if I do become it.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he can be my buddy.
Absolutely.
But I don't think I could afford him.
Well, and CCI is a nonprofit organization. They never charge for their dogs, whether they're graduate dogs or release dogs. They don't charge.
Yeah, I think the key thing is whether you qualify, and there's obviously an extensive application and screening.
Because a lot of people get dogs, but they don't have the right environment, stuff like that, for them to really take care of a good dog.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for your call. So, Brenda, we're nearing the end of our time, but one thing that at least years ago when I was kind of looking into this and did an interview with someone that was part of folks that pioneered this in King County in Seattle, there were some issues about the presence of a courthouse dog and how that might have swayed or even tainted some testimony, and then sometimes there was appeals and other things in those cases for that very reason. Has there been any experiences like that with anything that Tibet's been involved with that you know of?
No, not yet. We've done one jury trial so far. The jury trial that we participated in, the jury did not even know Tibet was on the stand with the child.
Wow.
They were escorted out before we went on the stand, and then I put her up there with the child. Then they brought the jury back in, and the child testified, and then they escorted them out again. And
so the idea there is the concern that the jury seeing the dog with that kid testifying might affect them in some way, whereas
they
if they didn't know,
to why the dog is there. It may stimulate some type of sympathy factor or that type of thing.
Wow, interesting. So, and is that typically when Tibet is actually on the stand, is that how it works? The jury or whoever is not privy
to like I said,
that?
We've only done one jury trial. Our dependency trials, we don't have juries for those.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but she's on the stand. She's out of sight. She doesn't make any noise. People a lot of times forget that she's even up there. The child, leaves the stand and I go up to get her and they're all kind of like, oh, we forgot she was up there. So,
yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, we're at the end of our time, but I do want to mention just as a coincidental thing that there is a cool event that WMNF is involved with, as is Voices for Children. It's the second annual Diversity Bowl-a-thon. And it's Saturday, May 21st at Pinchasers Midtown on Armenia in Tampa. So that way you can support WMNF, you can support Voices for Children, which looks after Brenda and sort of by extension Tibet, obviously. So, and again, we want to give Voices for Children's website one more time. So it's fcgal.org. And we want to give Canine Companions for Independence website, which is simply cci.org. Brenda, thank you so much for coming in and bringing Tibet and all your great work helping kids with and others with some struggles in some of those cases and testifying and on the courtroom stand.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. In a few moments, I'll chat briefly with Carla Wilson about her efforts to place an initiative tied to the Greyhound Protection Act on the ballot in Seminole County. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. I'm going to feature a comedian who performed a few days ago in Austin at the Moon Tower Comedy and Oddity Festival, where she had great sets. She's a longtime Talking Animals favorite, particularly this bit. This is Jackie Cation with a piece called Animals in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
But the truly crazy people in Los Angeles are literally the animal people. And before I go into it, allow me to make an announcement. I love animals. I love them. People are animals. I love people. I love the tiny animals we have as pets. I love the larger ones we eat. I love all the animals. I'm like Dr. Doolittle up here. I frickin' love the animals. My husband has an iguana. It's like petting a purse, but it's a perfectly nice animal. Very adorable lizard. And, but get this, when I was a kid, of course, if you had an old dog or a very ill cat, you sadly put the dog down, put the cat to sleep. It was very sad. But they would go to Happy Dog or Cat Heaven, and you would go to the pound to get a new... And it's a circle of life. It was very beautiful. That doesn't happen in crazy Los Angeles land, where people are like, oh no, the cat's only 17, we're gonna get dialysis. Are ya? I have a friend of mine who has a cat that is 21 years old, and in addition to the plethora of other issues going on with this cat, it now has diabetes. And so she has to shoot it up twice a day. You know what that is? Time for a new cat. New cat twice a day? Why do you get a cat? So you don't have to do anything. That's why you get a cat. Because it poops in a box. $3,000 for diabetic cat medicine for this cat. You know what that is? That is 3,000 new cats. Because cats are free. And I have another friend of mine who has a dog, and the dog has to get a new hip, but it didn't work. And so the dog is still scooting around on a cart like Captain Pike. And I'm gonna tell you something. It is a dog. It is not ever going to be Stephen Hawking. Not ever. It's not gonna write the great American novel from the cart. It's not gonna cure cancer from the cart. If it can't run, new dog, new dog! And people get mad at me in L.A., and they come up to me after shows, and they're like, you don't like animals. And I said, no, I don't like you. Because you're a jackass about your pet. You gotta let go, weirdo. And because what do you get with a cat or a dog? 15, 20 years. That's what you get. I didn't make that rule. If you would like more than that, turtle. Turtle, 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 turtle. Tiny turtle, hat, tutu, carried around your creepy Paris Hilton purse. You lift its head up. Adorable. Giant tortoise that could walk slowly around your backyard for 300 years and become a burden on your descendants. Turtle. Where I go to eat breakfast in LA, right next to my breakfast place, there is an animal eye care clinic. Kid you not. Animal eye care clinic. I don't have insurance, but let's get Mitten some contacts. Better now or now? Now. Now or
now. Yeah. That was Jackie Cation with a piece called Animals, taken from her CD, It Is Never Going to Be Bred. Let's move now into our conversation with Carla Wilson about the efforts behind that ballot initiative in Seminole County. Let's welcome Carla right now. Hello, Carla. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So let's jump right in. Maybe you could describe the provision that you're seeking to place on the ballot in Seminole County.
Absolutely. The Seminole County, Florida, which is kind of in the Longwood area of Central Florida. In Seminole County, citizens have joined together in a grassroots campaign that will protect greyhounds with the Greyhound Protection Act is what we're trying to pass. And the Greyhound Protection Act will do several things. It will first ensure that the greyhound injuries at the Stanford Orlando Kennel Club, which is the local track in the county, will be reported to the public. Currently, they are not. The second thing it will do is it will require greyhound trainers to provide information on the fate of the greyhounds that leave the track, something that also currently is not done. And it will eliminate a special interest loophole that exempts racing greyhounds from county licensing and inspection laws, which also is not done. Basically, this is a campaign about common sense and compassion to increase transparency that's happening at a track in my county. And frankly, it's outrageous that these injuries go unreported. You know, it's like the track's dirty little secret. They go unreported, and the public has a right to know. And in fact, 80% of the public in Seminole County have said that they want to know. When they were polled.
Then I would think, depending on what kind of resistance you're meeting, that this provision has a pretty good chance of making it. How many signatures do you need to get it onto the ballot?
We need a total of about a little less than 18,000. And we've collected nearly 10,000 signatures to date. We're on track.
Okay.
But it's going to be very close. And we encourage anyone who wants to be involved to visit the website protectdog.org. To get involved, maybe make a trip here to Seminole County and help us collect signatures. That would be greatly appreciated.
Right. It sounds like at this point, what is your deadline, or what is the cutoff point for hitting that 18,000?
The deadline is June 10th.
Okay. So, yeah, we are
coming up.
Fast approaching. Right. So, and can anyone, regardless of where they're registered or where they live or whatever, be involved in helping secure those signatures?
Absolutely. If you live in Alaska, you can come here and help us collect signatures. You just can't sign the petition unless you're a registered Seminole County voter.
Right. So the signatures are specific to Seminole, but the people who would help gather them are not in any way.
Correct.
So that's cool. So it sounds like really it would be great if people are listening who weren't aware of this, that live in Seminole County would make themselves available for signing it. But it sounds like really what would be great is that anybody, whether from Alaska to even closer, would sign on to help collect those signatures just to make sure you hit the 18,000 by June 10. And traditionally, at least in those efforts, there's always some signatures that unfortunately have to be thrown out for one reason or another. So I'm sure you want to get more than the 18,000 by the time the deadline hits, just so you know that you're totally solid.
Correct.
Has there been any kind of resistance to this from the track directly or indirectly or any other interests?
Well, you know, the tracks are, the dog track owners oppose injury reporting.
Yeah.
Of course, because they don't want the public to know how many dogs are hurt. And at Sanford Orlando alone, since 2008, there have been at least 42 greyhounds that have died, including dogs that have suffered from open skull fractures to dogs that were electrocuted by falling into the mechanical lure. So this is something, like I said, it's a common sense measure to increase transparency, and citizens have a right to know. Florida is one of only two states that does not have injury reporting. It's us and Alabama that don't require injury reporting. It's very important that, the public know how many dogs are being injured locally.
Obviously, that's going to help, hopefully, pretty soon get the whole dog racing thing halted once and for all. Because, if you can ignore the horrors of it, or if you just aren't being able to be made aware of the horrors of it, then why would you think it needs more drastic action?
And dogs play an important role in our lives. They're dogs. They're not racing machines. And that's what we want. We want them to be treated as dogs. We want you, if they're injured, you report, that they're injured. If once they're finished racing, you tell the public where they're going. So it's a common sense measure that, like I said, 80% of the people in the county, when polled, they supported this.
So it sounds... Go ahead, Carla, sir.
No, I said we just need to get it on the ballot.
Right. And it also sounds like with that 80% figure, that key step two is making sure that people who have said that live in Seminole County, are aware of this ballot effort. Because if it's that big of a percentage, presumably when presented the opportunity, they would sign. But we just got to make sure they know about it or just knock on that many more doors.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Again, let's say the website again is protectdogs.org. You can find out more information about this and how you could help out. And even if you just had a couple of days or a few hours, depending where you lived, I mean, just anything to help collect more signatures, I think is just so important. So
absolutely, protectdogs.org. And we'll be happy to sign you up at an event, or If you're uncomfortable collecting signatures by yourself, we can pair you up with a seasoned signature gatherer.
Sure, and they'll get experience, and then they'll turn you loose to do it the next time on your own. So
that's right.
The main thing is we got to get more signatures. So Carla, thank you so much for doing this, for spearheading this effort, and thank you also for joining us today on Talking Animals, and hopefully making more people both aware of the effort and hopefully drumming up some people to get some more signatures. So.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals teacher right now. We'll hit a couple of animal news and announcements, including that this weekend is the Tampa Pet Expo, Saturday, April 30th, Sunday, May 1st, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, Florida State Fairgrounds. And more information about that is TampaBayPetExpo.com. And by now, I'm not even sure if there'd be tickets available or how you could get them, but just one more reminder that the screening of The Champions, the documentary about the pit bulls pulled from the Michael Vick dogfighting ring, and more topics beyond that in the pit bull realm, is a screening Monday, May 2nd from 7:30 p.m. at AMC West Shore 14. So you can find out more about that by going to tugg.com and search for Tampa. Also coming up, join Florida Voices for Animals and Animal Coalition of Tampa at Snappers Grill and Comedy Club, Palm Harbor, Thursday, May 5th at 6 p.m. for an evening of laughs. Headliner comic DC Benny and feature act Steve Netta. All proceeds benefit animals and efforts on their behalf. For more information and to reserve tickets, go to floridavoicesforanimals.org. Also on the horizon is the Puppy Love Benefit, Pet Pal Animal Shelter. That's May 14th, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Historic Coliseum, 535 4th Avenue North, St. Pete. And you can find out more about that at petpalanimalshelter.com. So I think that's all we probably have time for today. Duncan Strauss, you are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days, and there will be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, using this opportunity to acknowledge the passing of the singular Prince, a truly devastating loss to many of us. Keep in mind, by the way, that the band Four Star Riot has just been added to this Saturday's Tropical Heatwave lineup, doing a tribute to Prince. Another reason to get your tickets to the Heat Wave now, WMNF.org. Meanwhile, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We're going to take those guesses off air, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. Rob Lori is up next with Radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, May 4th, when my guest will be Nicole Green, director of Animal Learn, an organization that promotes humane science education and helps schools at all levels, from elementary school up through med school and vet school, implement that sort of curriculum. So go to TalkingAnimals.net for all your social media needs. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Don't forget, if you don't already have them, get your tickets. Tropical Heatwave. We have our own Tropical Heatwave website, or just go to WNF.org and find out more. But don't miss it. Bunch of great bands. And again, this Prince tribute added just in the last day or two is going to make it all the more special. So we'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. NPR News headlines coming up. Thanks.